Hello, I'm Andrew Scrivani.
And I'm Chef John. Welcome to the Chef John Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone. Here we are again at the Chef John Podcast, and I am just getting over my food coma. John, how are you doing?
How are you doing, Andrew? Me too. I'm sure we're the only ones that overate slightly. We might have overeaten, but at least we overdrank.
Yes. And I don't know which one was worse. Still recovering from both the hangover and the food coma.
They're a good combo.
But guess what you get to do, which is so great to do when you're feeling bloated and uncomfortable, is traveling during the holidays. Literally the best combination of things to do.
Yes. Add a little weather-related stress, maybe a couple delays.
Sure. Maybe a flat tire or two.
Flat tire. And then the always amazingly delicious airport food.
Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about airport food. There are some places in this country that take their airport food more seriously than others. And I know that you don't particularly love to fly. So I'm sure that you have frequented quite a few airport bars to kind of ease your way into your economy plus seat.
Come on, I'm in business class.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, actually, I've only done that once. Although I was upgraded one time completely randomly. Someone said, excuse me, sir, can we talk to you for a second? Ticket, blah, blah, blah. Here's your new number. And I was like, 4D. That's a really low number. And I was led to the seat, and it was one of those gigantic, what do they call them, first class?
Yeah, that.
I'm not familiar. I don't run in these circles. Anyway, I was randomly reseated in first class. Never really did hear the reason. They're just like, would you mind? And I said, no, I'm cool. So anyway, my one time in first class.
And you left Michelle and Coach?
It was a solo trip.
Oh, you got lucky.
But, and since I'll say this because she doesn't listen to the podcast, I would have. And I'm totally kidding. She's our biggest fan. Let's get that on the record. And of course, I would not have left her and Coach. I would have given her the seats. And then we would have switched off and on every hour.
Okay.
It's funny you mentioned the airport food, especially the, you know, there's always the food court. There's the little kiosks.
Mm-hmm.
And you usually have your one little, either it's a semicircle or a little strip where they put what they apparently think are restaurants. But you know what? I hate flying so much. And it is so nerve-wracking and terrifying. Talk about like emotional eating or comfort food gorging. Like that's where you do it. That's my medication.
So they have boxed mashed potatoes at the airport?
I'm assuming any mashed potato you get at an airport. It was, you know, powder not too long ago. So yes, it totally works on that level for me. For a few moments as I'm eating the, let's say, instant mashed potatoes with the instant gravy next to the turkey. They used to be turkey, but then they took all the parts off and whipped it into a puree and formed it into a loaf, baked it. Added chemicals, semi-smoked it, shaved it really thin on a slicer, covered it in instant gravy, and called it, you know, hot turkey dinner or whatever. It's literally comfort food. It's like, I might be going down in a flaming wreck.
This is the last meal? This is what you want to eat as your last meal?
They might be picking up pieces in some field in Kansas pretty soon, but at least I'm going out with this really, really delicious, not even close to real mashed potato dinner before I go. So yeah, I actually have a sort of a soft spot with airline food. Now I'm guessing you probably don't. You probably avoid that generally.
Yeah, I'm not a big eater in the airport. No, I prefer to be somewhat light on the plane. I do not want to have to excuse myself to the restroom all too often. I definitely do not want to have to, you know what, and on the plane. So I tend to eat very light before I get on the plane. And then I try to do my best to stay calm because I don't sleep on airplanes. It could be a 3-hour flight. It could be a 20-hour flight. I do not sleep on airplanes. So usually there's a little melatonin involved and I try to be as calm as possible, but sleep usually doesn't come. So I try not to eat too heavily in the airport.
I cannot sleep on an airplane either. Never have been able to. But yes, I actually am guilty of gorging at airports, and it's almost like the worst place I could find. It almost makes me feel somehow better. I can't explain it. There's always some horrible sports bar ish concept there.
Always.
And so it's bad enough I'm not going to like the actual restaurant specializing in food. Now I'm eating the food that's been totally phoned in by a wannabe fake sports bar, which is a kind of a crazy concept for airport. Like, Haley, you guys want to go watch the Knicks Celtics at JFK? Like, who's going to a sports bar in an airport? So it's a bar with TVs apparently that they have on ESPN.
Yep.
So anyway, yeah, I almost never bring food. I always pretty much rely on the airport food. Although I'm remembering one time way back when Michelle and I were going to take a trip. I'm guessing fly back east to visit my mom. And we decided one time, let's save some money. Let's not eat gross airport food. Let's make some sandwiches, like some really nice ones. So, I decided I go out to a nice Italian deli on Valencia, Molinari's, which you may have been to over the years. I think your uncle lives in that hood.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which is recently closed, unfortunately. But anyway, got some. Oh, it's Luca. Sorry. Michelle's just reminding me. It's Luca, not Molinari. Molinari's still open. But anyway, really went all out. Beautiful sliced meats, nice bread, did a tapenade.
Oh, wow.
Pickled vegetables, like really tried to make these gorgeous sandwiches. Cheese, of course. So we're wrapping these up. And as I'm making them, I'm thinking to myself, I'm still going to get something at the airport. I have such muscle memory. Even if I'm holding the world's two best submarine sandwiches, somehow I'm going to make it to the food court. So anyway, I got that in the back of my mind. So anyway, make these sandwiches, pack them up. Now, we usually do the super shuttle to the airport, but for whatever reason, we were flying out of Oakland that time. And I remember a friend mentioned, since you're doing a relatively short trip, I think it was only like 5 or 6 days we were going to be gone. They have this like special deal. If it's less than a week, you can park on a lot and they give you a free ride. It's only like literally 5 minutes and you just leave your car there. It's full-time security. Nope. So, it's just nice not having to wait for a super shuttle.
Yeah.
So this is the one time where we're going to actually park and ride, they call it, or whatever it is. So we do that. We go, we park, and everything worked as described. Flight on time. Everything's going perfectly. We get on the plane and, they do the initial spiel and then they start handing out what's going to be the snack or whatever it is, which reminds us, let's have our sandwiches.
Yep.
These are going to be, as they used to say a few years ago, epic. So epic. But actually it was an epic fail, as they said, even a few years before that.
Sure.
Somebody, and I don't want to name names, it was me, left these sandwiches in the back seat of our car, which is now locked in a parking lot in the sun in Oakland for almost a week. And I'm thinking it's only been probably 8 or 10 hours. These things already have to be really getting funky. And I put like name a funky sandwich ingredient, like strong cheese, salami, like you name it. It was on the sandwich. Extra mayo, of course. Why not?
Why not?
So not only do I not have food, and which was the whole purpose of this exercise, so I didn't have to eat this airport/airline food, but now I have to think of it going rancid and festering in our clean car in the back seat. And I'm guessing even in the mild temperatures of the Bay Area, this car is getting, the sun is going to be in the 80s easily, like every day.
What I would have done in that situation is I would have called.
Turn this plane around.
I wouldn't know. I just would have called Carvana and sold my car from the airplane and had them come and pick it up. Just pick it up, flatbed it out, and just send me a check. I'm done, because there's no way I'm opening those doors to get in that car again.
So, I'm obsessed because I can't do anything. Like, what's the worst thing ever is having no control over a situation, and you're helpless. And obviously there's serious examples of this thing I'm feeling, but let's get back to sandwiches.
And on a plane, the ultimate in no control.
Ultimate no control. And now it's no control squared. So nothing I can do. So at the very least, I have a semi amusing story to tell on the trip. Like, hey, guess what I did before we left? Made two humongous sub sandwiches, left them in an 8-degree car. So we did our trip. I'm thinking it, like, not a minute went by the entire trip. I wasn't thinking of those sandwiches. I couldn't tell you anything. It was Gracie and Mom. Didn't care. Just those sandwiches are in the back of my car. How did I do that? This is going to be intensely disgusting to get back in the car. Then we're going to have to drive in the car. Anyway, we come back to Oakland. I thought about this all the way back. Now, this is probably the least terrifying flight I've ever had because I wasn't thinking about crashing. Guess what I was thinking about?
Sandwiches.
The sandwiches. So we get off the plane. We take the shuttle. We get to our car very quickly, right where we left it, open the door, and the smell that came out of that car, I've never been more shocked in my life.
Okay, why?
Because there was no odor.
What?
You could not have ever suspected that there was food ever left in the car. I have no explanation other than the heat sort of dried everything. And I did, we had them wrapped up like in a little bit of foil, like they weren't tightly wrapped, but apparently just enough. And with the heat, they just sort of almost dehydrated. They were kind of stiff and they were not dripping. I cannot explain it. Now, I think the saving grace is I didn't load it up with like lettuce, tomato. It was mostly like meat, cheese, condiment type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So by some miracle, I worried for nothing. For 6 days, however long we were gone, I obsessed over this scene I was going to have to deal with when we got back. And as it turned out, it was much to do about nothing. You wouldn't even have known. Like, there was a faint, maybe faint smell. Like, how did you go through fast food? Like, did someone eat in the car? But it was not close to as horrible as I had imagined.
So let me ask you this then.
Did we eat them?
Did you try one?
No. I assume 6 days later, probably food safety, sanity wise, not the best idea. Because a lot of, you know, bacteria that would hurt you maybe doesn't give off an odor. But as far as like disgusting growing mold science experiment, I've never been more shocked in my life. I was like, as I'm opening the door, I'm like, all right, prepare yourself. Should I put some like noxzema or something under my nose? What do we...
Silence of the Lambs.
What do they do in the slasher movies? What do the cops going in do? So yes. Now I realize probably a horrible letdown for end of a story on the Chef John podcast.
Well, I mean, the way we finish this up is you got to basically tell everyone how to make the sandwich, then let them leave it in their car for a week.
See if they can replicate it.
And we call it a dry age sandwich.
I think fat saved us. I think all the fat from the ham and the salami and the prosciutto just encased the grossness. And maybe it was like bad bread. It just was like, it wasn't like sour. It wasn't alive. It just, I don't know. It was dry aged. It was a dry aged sandwich.
It was a dry aged sandwich, mummified sandwich, whatever you want to call it. But I think we should put this recipe out there and see if anybody is daring enough to make it and try it. The conditions have to be right. So we need somebody in Oakland to do this.
Yes, right. It has to be the same atmospheric conditions.
Same kind of sliced meat, same kind of tapenade, same kind of, you know, all of that. Wrap it the same way. Put it in the backseat of the car. Let it sit there for 6 days. See what happens. We may be onto something here.
Although I can hear our millennial fans right now. 6 days. I want it now.
Oh, no.
Is that a terrible stereotype?
Oh, that's awful.
You're a millennial, right?
No, I'm Gen X, man.
Sorry, millennials. I'm basing everything off Andrew. Never mind. It's actually Gen X, I mean.
I can't wait for this thing to come out.
What's that?
The sandwich. I want it.
It's not happening. But anyway, I'm sure everyone's disappointed it wasn't disgusting. And I finished the story with me retching, trying to clean the back of my car while Michelle laughed at my forgetfulness. But no, it all's well that ends well.
It brought up some very painful memories for me. Sejong once spilled a very creamy, milky coffee in one of my cars. And we thought we cleaned it well enough until we came back and it smelled like a cheese factory. And I immediately sold the car. That was it. I'm like, I am not dealing with this for another minute. I'm selling the car.
Oh my God. You know, that reminds me of a quick roommate story in San Francisco. I had a crock pot way back in the day and a roommate made something in it. and just left food in it. And I had been off working for a day or two. I came back and this thing was like just disgusting. And he was gone, came back, didn't clean it again, left again. And it was like a war of attrition. Like, I'm not cleaning it. He's clearly not cleaning it. So 3 days later, I just threw it out. I just took it out to the garbage and threw it away.
Yeah, that's the right approach.
I mean, like, do I need this crock pot that bad that I'm going to clean this disgusting mess? And yes, we are doing a new feature here on the Chef John podcast, the Chef John podcast diet, where all you do is listen to some of our stories and you lose your appetite for 2-3 days at a time. So let us know if you're having a trouble with the impulse control, the appetite suppression. We have a story for you.
All right. I don't want to leave people with the impression that we're going to turn their stomachs with horrible stories of things gone wrong in the kitchen or otherwise. But I do want to talk about something that is interesting. It's a fun food fact. And there's all sorts of sort of culture and history around this particular food item. What I'm talking about is Spam, John.
Great, great song.
All right, sing it.
No, I cannot.
Oh, come on.
We don't do any Monty Python.
Cover. We will be getting John to sing at some point during the show.
I'll do the first word, Spam.
Okay, there it is.
That'll hold you.
Spam, a fun food fact, which many of you probably already know, we're not breaking new ground here, stands for spiced ham. Put those two things together, you get Spam. A staple in some Asian cuisines. I know my wife is Korean, and Spam plays a role in a lot of things that were traditional in her house growing up. And I know that in Filipino cuisine, it is also very popular. So you live in an Asian city, John, so you must have some Spam recollections.
I have zero Spam recollections. And I'll tell you, I've had it as a probably teenager back in Shortsville, New York.
Okay.
My father probably cracked open a tin at one point.
Was he in the military?
No. No, he was on the railroad and from New York City. He was very worldly.
Yeah.
He knew about all these exotic foods from faraway lands. but I'm totally serious now. I had it, let's say for the sake of argument, age 14.
Okay.
A couple slices. I think he actually cooked it with eggs.
Okay. Yeah. Spam and eggs.
Sure. That's a popular usage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I probably didn't have it again for... Well, I mean, I was 15 there. So I probably was in my late 30s, early 40s. I think I had a Spam fried rice.
Yep.
And pardon the expression, but like an elevated version.
Mm-hmm.
We want to serve you fried rice, but we want to charge for, filet mignon.
So we're going to put this meat product in it.
We're going to nostalgic it. Like there's all these ways you can rationalize putting something like that on your menu.
Sure.
Other than people that grew up eating it, like you said, in some cultures, it's part of the cuisine and I understand celebrating it. But the people not from those cuisines fetishizing it, where it's become this like thing that people at sports bars that I mentioned earlier think they should do fritters out of it and egg rolls with it. Now, I guess the food cost is pretty good on a can of Spam.
Yeah, I would think.
So maybe for financial reasons, if I owned a place, I'd be like, hey, can we work some Spam into the menu? But I never acquired a taste, if that's the right way.
Yeah,
to put it.
I mean, that's fair.
I didn't find it generally, and I'm fine with mystery meat. I've eaten enough Euros in my life where, yeah, they say it's beef and lamb, but come on. How do any of us know what is in that mystery loaf that is now in my pita bread? So I'm not afraid of mysterious meat products, but there's just something about the Spam. I you know, which by the way I would have called spiced ham. But no, my Spam knowledge, my Spam repertoire is very limited. And so whenever Spam comes up at like a cocktail party, I excuse myself to the restroom.
But have you incorporated that in any of your recipes?
Zero recipes on Food Witches.
Well, we're breaking new ground here.
And I've done 2,000 recipes.
I know, we're breaking new ground. We finally found an ingredient.
Now, this is a great one for the audience. When you go to leave your 5-star rating, hopefully you get to leave a little comment there.
Yes.
If I were to do a spam recipe, what out of all the applications, and from what I hear, you can use it for anything.
Anything.
Except eat it alone by itself. That's just not done. But out of all the recipes in the world, from all the different cuisines and cultures where this has been highlighted, what would be the one spam dish to do?
Wow.
Do we trust the audience with that? I do.
I am totally down with this because I am just shocked that there's an ingredient that you have not cooked with.
I know. That's the insane part.
I'm shocked.
And I've cooked with many things I don't eat on a regular basis, but I don't know what it is. Is it the shape of the can? It's not exactly square. It's not round. The can gives me the willies a little bit. Do you open it with a key? Does a can opener work on it? Does it peel off? Because if it peels off, I have a problem with those because the ring always comes off. And then
strike two.
You got to use needle nose pliers. It's a whole scene. So no, seriously, if you folks would like to see me immortalize spiced ham, also known as spam, in a recipe, please let me know what that would be.
Oh, this is going to be great. You're going to be cooking spam for a month. Send Chef John cans of spam.
Send me the money to buy spam.
No, send him spam. Industrial size.
I will decide how to spend the money. Part of it might go to spam. No, that's not a dumb idea, except all the stuff you just said.
Sorry.
But I would like to do a spam recipe. It's outrageous. There isn't one in the library. What should I do? I'm thinking, just to spite you, spam ravioli.
I bet you if you did that right, it would be so good.
Well, thank you.
With a brown butter sage sauce.
Well, no, I would render the, I think there's some congealed like white fat stuff on around the edge of it from the pictures I've seen as I secretly late at night look at spam pictures. My secret's out. Oh my God, this is so embarrassing.
This is horrible.
I think I would render that and I would use that.
Okay.
Instead of a brown butter, I would do a brown spam fat.
Are you elevating?
Oh, I'm elevating. It was here and then people could see my hand. It's up here now.
It's up there now.
So yes, you know, you got to elevate the flavors. I mean, if I've learned anything from watching food television, flavors need to get elevated.
Absolutely. Put them in the elevator and send them to the top floor.
Because you know what that affects? The flavor profile.
Absolutely. And the tasteability.
And it's all about the flavor profile. Also a little bit mouthfeel.
Mouthfeel, yeah.
We could do a whole show just on food buzzwords. Spamability.
Spamability.
Now, if we do this and I end up filming this, people have to promise to send the link to their entire mail list on their email, which I believe is known as spamming. So this has come full circle. Thank you very much.
That was brilliant.
So we're going to call this working title Project Spam.
I knew I wanted to do the show with you for a reason.
These are the million ideas you just aren't able to come up with without me. Come on.
No, this is it. I mean, spamming spam.
All right, folks, it's up to you. What spam recipe will be immortalized on Food Wishes and make it easy? It's my first time.
Well, as you all know, here at the Chef John podcast, we love your call-ins. We love when you leave us messages on the call-in line, and we have a new one for you today.
Hello, Chef John. I have a question for both you and Andrew. I was wondering, what is the most strangest or bizarre thing you guys have ever eaten? It doesn't have to be good, but I would love to hear what you guys have to say.
So, John, once again, we did not get the name or the place.
That's fine. You know, I love this because I get to give them the name and the location.
So who is it?
From the sounds of it, definitely sounded like Phil McCracken from Des Moines, Iowa.
Old man McCracken's son.
That's McCracken's son. Exactly.
Wow.
So anyway, we want to thank Phil, who spells it with an F. It's kind of weird.
Two L's.
So Phil McCracken. But great question. Do you want to, you go first.
The most bizarre food I ever ate was in Jackson Heights, Queens. I was invited by a group called the Gastronauts, and their whole thing was that they were going to go to places and eat weird food. This was like sort of inspired by Andrew Zimmern's, you know, bizarre foods thing. So this whole group, they were called the Gastronauts. I'm not sure if they're still in existence or if they're all still alive from eating weird foods. But they invited me to this thing that was going to be covered by the paper. So I went and I ate goat's brains. And quite honestly, it just kind of tasted like soft tofu. And that was my most bizarre food adventure with the Gastronauts.
So it did not taste like chicken. We've got that out of the way. Well, it's weird. You say Gastronauts, which reminds me of a food show. They were serving Rocky Mountain oysters,
mm-hmm.
also known as prairie oysters. I don't remember the name of the group, but let's go with Gastronauts. And those did taste like chicken.
Hmm.
So that's like the go-to obligatory answer when the chef's like, what's the strangest, most bizarre thing you've ever eaten? It's like, well, deep fried testicles is pretty out there.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's been in so many food shows and so many travel logs where people that's kind of lost. It's like, oh my God, you ate what?
It's sort of like if you haven't eaten that, you're almost not a foodie.
Yeah. Like seriously, people, if you've not eaten, you know, steer testicles, get out there, stop what you're doing, Google the Gastronauts, find out where they're playing this weekend. So that's sort of my pat answer for that. Because to be honest with you, I have never eaten like a lot of crazy bizarre foods, or at least it's things I consider crazy bizarre. Now, I think one bizarre food that people eat without thinking is the tamale from a lobster,
mm-hmm.
that green, squishy, I guess it's the liver. Isn't it the liver? I think it's the liver. Which, by the way, if you ever had a really great lobster bisque, that's why it was so delicious. You use that to make the roux with. So usually flour, butter is what you thicken a soup or sauce. But with a lobster bisque, you can take the tamale and the butter and flour, and you make this weird looking green paste. But when it cooks, it kind of, I don't know, just it gives the dish that lobster flavor, that fresh, beautiful whole lobster flavor. But that's not my official answer. Neither of those are my answer, because the most bizarre, strangest, disturbing thing I've ever eaten, I have no idea what it was.
Oh, do tell.
Let me explain. So I'm not going to name the place. Probably, hopefully they're closed down by now. But I went to a restaurant in San Francisco and I ordered a chicken clay pot.
Okay.
I'm not sure why. It just like must be good. They cook it in clay pot. Sounds like a nice thing to order. So it comes to the table and it's meat, sauce, vegetables, pretty straightforward. And I'm about halfway through it, kind of reading the paper, I believe. I was dining alone. I remember that much. And it was chicken on the bone. And about halfway into this, I'm starting to, you know, pick the meat off the bone with my fork or spoon, whatever. And I realize, and I should preface this by saying I've butchered, cut up, prepped, fabricated more chicken parts than I care to remember in my career. Like I know a chicken anatomy, like a chicken anatomy doctor, whatever those are called.
Veterinarians.
A chickenarian. So I'm about halfway through this and I'm kind of picking around this sort of weird bone structure and it hits me like a ton of chicken that this is not chicken. This is a small animal. This is definitely a vertebrate. Got that much. But it's not that whatever looks sort of like a pelvis-ish type bone, shoulder blade or something. That's not in a chicken. Chickens don't have those. And again, I've been through all the chicken parts. I've touched them. I've eaten them. I've cut meat off them and used the bones for the stock. Like there's no new chicken bones, is there?
Nope.
Now, you know, because I'm an idiot, I'm like picking it around a little more to make sure what I'm suspecting is true. And yes, after a couple more pick the meat off these bones so you can just see the bone, because my previous eight bites or whatever was just some chunks of meat mixed in with some vegetable, broccoli, whatever in the play pot. So now I'm a little concerned. I'm eating an animal that I have absolutely no idea what it is. I just know what it isn't. It's not a chicken. So I quietly put my fork down and I asked for the check. I can't even have a discussion. I just excuse myself. And I went and had a burger or something, a sandwich. And it wasn't like I could ask, like, excuse me, this is not chicken. Well, come on, what is it? Like, I didn't even want to guess. If you'll excuse me, I'm going to go eat a burger. At least it has a nominally higher chance that it's mostly beef. So I got that going for me. Would have been ironic if I got one out and gotten a hot dog and accidentally ate the same animal and not known it.
I have the pressing question that everybody's wanting to ask, though.
Yes.
Did it taste like chicken?
It did taste like chicken, which is why I was like, I said, like 6-7 bites in before I was like, well, hold on a second. Is that a shin bone? What? Is that an elbow? Do chickens have elbow? Like I was so disoriented, but hungry and possibly elevated levels of appetite.
That has to be the best, weirdest, most terrifying food story ever.
So I would love to tell Phil, spelled with an F, Phil McCracken from Des Moines, which I believe is beautiful, the French part. Have you ever been to the French part of Iowa?
I've never been to Iowa.
Beautiful. Très beautiful. So anyway, Phil, that's my answer. I wish I could give you specifics. But we we'll leave it as to be determined. I would love to get an MRI of that clay pot.
Oh, John, we learned so much today. And I'm still laughing. My stomach hurts. I'm still laughing.
We might have learned too much.
We learned way too much today. There was so much grossness.
Let me recap it because it's hard for everyone to digest.
Please. Yeah, exactly.
Or not digest this info. I think what we learned is never, never make your own sandwiches to take on a plane. just eat the stuff on the plane or in the food court. It's fine. It's fine. Because what might happen, you might leave in the back seat. If you do, though, do not put a lot of lettuce, tomato. Not only do those, according to purists, not belong on a real sandwich, but that's what's going to be stinking when you get back. Stick with the meats and cheeses. Also, maybe just carry the sandwiches in your pocket.
Very good advice.
And then we learned that my Spam knowledge is seriously lacking, but that I'm going to do a Spam video in the future based on our audience feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And then last but not least, never, under any circumstances, order a clay pot.
Oh, no.
I don't know if it's the lid, something. They thought they could get away with that. Maybe if it was just on a plate, on some rice, I would have seen it right away.
Either that, John, or bring the MRI machine to the restaurant.
Or yes, soon people will be able to 3D print their own x-ray machines, which I'm sure, what could go wrong there? Never order a clay pot until you're able to bring your own scanner to the restaurant.
This goes back to an old show of ours, John. Do you want to know or you don't want to know?
I don't want to know. All right. Well, thank you. And I guess there's nothing left to say, but say goodnight, Andrew.
Goodnight, Andrew.